Hey, this is Dustin Lee from RetroSupply.co. This is the Master of One podcast.
Welcome to this Sandbox episode of the Master of One podcast, part two for this week. This week we talk to co-founder and design lead for Hoods for Design Co., Amy Hood. I'm Andrew, your master of art and design.
I'm Patrick, your master of television and film.
And I'm Luke, your master of toys and games.
So set your cruise control for that long drive down to Palm Canyon, because it's time for another episode.
Where are we going?
This Sandbox episode to talk to the talented designer, type creator, entrepreneur, co-founder, and design lead for Chutzpah Design, Amy Hood. Welcome, Amy, to the show.
Yeah. Dang, what an intro. I feel like I'm like Kobe Bryant things. Running onto the court or something.
There you go.
I had to, well, here's the deal. So as I was typing stuff up, as we were talking, I'm like, there's stuff I left off. Like, there's stuff that we could have added into that. I'm like, I think we'll just get to it. Otherwise, we're going to spend our entire time doing the introduction.
15-minute intro? Yeah.
Yeah. You're just that, you know, you are just that all over the place with your stuff. So,
yeah.
And I can't wait to dive into that stuff. So, first of all, we're so glad that you're here. Half of the you call yourself the twin freak show that started Chutzpah Design. First of all, before we even go anywhere into any of this stuff, we want to get from you just a quick Wikipedia page about who you are, especially for people out there who maybe don't know your name yet, and they want to get to know who their new best friend's going to be.
Oh my gosh, new best friends. I love that. Well, I'm Amy Hood, and my sister Jennifer and I started Chutzpah Design about 7 years ago. And yeah, we mostly do branding and lettering. I feel like what most people know me for might be that font that I did with Retro Supply Co. called Palm Canyon Drive.
I've heard of it.
And yeah, it's a good one. He was like, oh man, I was so worried it was going to bomb. And I was kind of glad we did it together so that it would bomb with somebody else and not just on me. You know, I was like, at least it's half somebody else's fault if this goes wrong. But yeah. And then, yeah, we also run a speaker series. It's basically just a ripoff of Creative Mornings. But we wanted to do something that, you know, we didn't have to jump through the hoops of, you know, Creative Mornings. So we started our own, and I did that with a bunch of friends here in Orange County. You guys interviewed Josh Ariza. He's one of my co-founders.
Nice.
True.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's the man.
The handsome man from the West is what
we're going
to
say. I don't remember
as.
Much from that interview except just staring at him.
Just staring at his eyes.
Between him and his wife, they're like the best looking couple I know. And they're both the biggest sweethearts I know. They're the best. I love them.
They're great. And it's super depressing how awesome they are.
I know, right? You just feel like what am I doing?
Myself.
Oh, 100%, Patrick. I'm with you.
I wish
every time
you were jerks.
Yeah, I know. You do. You're like, something has to be wrong here.
I want to hate you so bad.
Yeah, and now they have an adorable baby daughter named Rooney, which is just like, they're just adding insult to injury.
Yep.
I know, just a bunch of jerks. Let's let's spend the rest of the episode just commiserating over that.
Just talking crap on Josh Ariza.
Okay, so you are part of you started all this stuff, and before we started the episode, you talked about how your family is a family of entrepreneurs, and you guys are, you have that Kentucky, like you had like a way that you described why that is.
I have this theory, and I know it's a broad state generalization, which I'm really bad about making these sweeping statements, you know, like, oh, I hate this and I love that. But I think that Kentuckians have a very high work ethic. Like we work so hard and we're not afraid to put the time, sweat, effort, energy into things. And I'm always really grateful that I was raised in Kentucky instead of California where I was born. And I just moved back here later because I don't meet people that are from here that generally are like that, you know? It's just like, oh, let's take it easy. Let's go to the beach. Like, their mom bought them their car, you know, like that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And in Kentucky, it's like, if you want to do something, go out and do it, you know? And so I feel like we were just kind of raised with that mentality. So we always thought we'd own our own company. It just was kind of like, okay, so like, when are we going to do that thing?
So what's really funny to me is that, just to jump in on that statement, going through and looking at, I've been familiar with your stuff for a while, but it obviously in preparing for the show, I was really trying to dive in and, make sure I was up to date on your latest releases. And I had this moment looking through some of your photos of like, man, these people are California through and through. Like, I really had that thought. Like, you do such a good job of putting out that vibe.
We've assimilated. Yeah. And we were actually born here. So I still have a lot of, like, my dad's lived here my whole life. So we would always visit twice a year. So I think that's probably why it is so also inherently a part of who we are. Yeah. But I'm so grateful that I got to grow up equal halves like Kentucky and California and even New York. It's just, I feel like kids should be forced to move. I know that's a horrible thing to say, but like it really teaches you a lot about different cultures, different ways people interact, just everything. Like the United States is huge. If you just visit a couple states, it's like visiting Europe, it's just so unique and so vast.
My wife's family is completely from Kentucky. In fact, I just picked her up yesterday from her being there for the last week.
What part?
And it's she's from the Ashland area, Wheatland. Okay. It's like the right on the West Virginia and Ohio border, like at that tri-state area. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like going. You almost feel like you need your passport.
Yeah,
I'm from Florida, and I live in San Antonio now, which are similar in some ways, but like Kentucky is completely outside of my realm of understanding.
Okay, now I gotta say something because you guys had Mama Sauce on recently too, Nick Sombrato, and I have a running joke with Nick Sombrato because Florida, he always tries to say that Florida's the best coast and all that. And first of all, California is definitely the best coast. Let's just get that out there.
I would argue that you're right. I mean, I'm from Florida. I would still rather go to the coast than California.
Right? He's so delusional, but he maintains this day that Florida's great. But also, Florida compared to Kentucky is still the worst. Florida is way worse because every time you read the news, it's like people eating each other and like murder and like I listen to this podcast called Sword and Scale, and it's just murder and mayhem, and it's always some guy from Florida.
That's because they moved down to Florida. That's where all the crazy people move to.
They move down. They can't handle the heat, and they just go nuts and kill people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
You try to handle Florida heat and humidity for a summer and then see what happens.
Oh, nope. That's why I left. I always forget how bad it is until I visit. I'm like, how do people do this?
Well, you did this whole episode, not the whole episode, but a lot of the episode that you did with Mark Bricky a couple years back, you and your sister, where you talk a lot about the importance of the cultural like influence and stuff like that as you were growing up. So rather than rehashing all that stuff, which I would love to do because it's super fun, just go listen to that episode. It's somewhere back in the archives. It's like 2015 or something, right?
Yeah, we did two of them with him, so it's somewhere in there. Yeah.
But it's really good. We dive more into how, before we started talking, the three of us were talking in preparation, and I said the whole idea about you being way more grounded in your approach to things because you didn't grow up in California, you weren't, exactly all the stuff that you just said, but you guys go into all these other diatribes about it too and talking about New York and what happens, how people perceive New York, and it's a great conversation, so go listen to that. But for this, I really want to know, getting back to California, going back there and setting up all of these businesses and taking advantage of all these opportunities, what's been the main driving factor behind that? Besides making money.
Yeah, it honestly started out as just we didn't have any other option because we didn't go to school and so we didn't have a degree. And then, the economy took a bad turn and the newspaper we were working at, it just folded. And I was trying to get a job and nobody would hire me. Literally no one would hire me. And I knew I was really talented and I just had never had the opportunity at my previous job to really do anything exciting or anything that really was up to the par of what I wanted to do. So then my portfolio sucked. Like everything was just kind of working against me. And I mean, I could go on like a 2-hour diatribe on the system is totally rigged for people having to get into crazy debt to go to school, to get a job, but then you still need 4 years education or 4 years of, actual job history, you know? Yeah. And it's just like this awful, awful cycle. So it was really not glamorous at all. It was Jen and I saying, okay, we can't get jobs. Like, it would be pointless to go work somewhere minimum wage. Like, let's try and get part-time jobs, but then like, let's just get chutzpah. Let's get our own company rolling. We always knew we wanted to do this. So let's just do it. And that's kind of how it started. And it was not, it was really tough, you know, like we just made a website in a week and we just called every friend that had always wanted us to work for them. Mm-hmm. And we just said, hey, remember when you wanted to hire me to do that CD cover? Well, now I'll do it and I'll do it for anything.
So
name your price.
That's crazy. So, I mean, that I'm from Midwest, grew up Midwest, and that feels a lot like that's the drive for the work ethic. You just have to make it happen. If you want to do something, you just have to do it. But like from the design world, it very much feels like you need to have experience, you know, to get in. And you coming from it, like where did any of that experience come from, or how did you get past not having it to actually just starting? Like,
Because I see what you're saying. I mean, because I would want to encourage people not to have to pay the 4-year tuition if they can't afford it. Even though I taught for 4 years at Laguna College of Art and Design, which is a phenomenal school, and it's an amazing education, but it's really expensive, and not everyone can afford that. So I mean, I probably could have gone to trade school, but I was going to a community college, and I was working at a coffee shop, and I was just, I had all these friends that were my customers that came in. And one of the guys that was my regular, he was like, what do you want to do? Like, why are you still in school? What are you trying to like work towards? What's your goal? You've been working here for 4 years. Let me help you. And he was like, you're meant for more than this coffee store. And he was a designer. And I was like, I took a design class. I think that I might want to do that because art is really hard, it turns out.
Yeah.
And so he gave me basically like an apprenticeship, and it was just like kismet. It was so perfect, and it was not glamorous. It was a coupon clipper. I was making like carpet cleaning ads, it was the stuff that it's not exciting, that I feel like a lot of students nowadays would say, I wouldn't do that job, and I don't blame them. But I think you kind of, if you want 4 years work experience, you have to take the jobs that are coming your way, and it's not going to be exciting all the time, but then you just have to work on your own doing these side projects, right? Like the, 30-day challenges or like those kind of things.
So what are the lessons you learn from designing, coupons?
That's actually, I wish everybody had to work in a magazine or some sort of an editorial situation, because text hierarchy is so key to everything, to any kind of design you want to do. Understanding hierarchy is pivotal. So I feel like all of those things absolutely transferred over, even though if I showed you the ads I made, you guys would like laugh so hard. They're so bad. And we were working for these clients, and the guy who owned the company, there was unlimited rounds of revision. So these customers just had like free reign.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
And they it was awful. It was awful. Just like everything. And I think mostly I just learned what not to do, right? Sure, that's half of your first jobs is just being like, okay, I needed the money. And I learned a lot of hard skills, like how to use programs, but also I will never run my company this way.
Yeah. I think one thing that has surprised me is, and this is not a knock towards anybody. So if someone's listening and they feel like, I'm after them, that's not the case.
Come on, Patrick. Yes, it is.
I'm after you. It has surprised me how many people just don't do type layout. Like, it's pretty crazy that our great illustrators are great designers and they're great, like, setting a scene or doing, like, a background or something like that. But that they basically, like, literally in some cases have to hand it off to someone else to actually do any of the typesetting or overlay.
Do you think that's like the kind of place our industry is in, though? The design industry in general, everything is becoming so niche, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone thinks that, and I mean, I've even done this too. Like, our business, we used to offer a wider range of services at chutzpah. And then we realized that, wow, we're really good at branding, and this is what brings in the best money for us. And so we completely focused all of our attention kind of on that. And luckily, branding is so kind of, it's kind of like an umbrella, right? You can do illustration and you can do a lot of fun things within the brand. But I mean, everyone is such a niche designer now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, you asked if that's like the way that the industry is trending, or if that's, you feel like the reality of it right now. I think you're right. And I think it's because of the advent of Instagram, because Instagram these days, you're seeing way more curated threads or feeds, right? So
right.
Somebody, and that can be good or bad. I mean, it's not necessarily
right.
one or
it's
the other.
It's not one way or the other, yeah.
And we talked to somebody just recently, a couple weeks ago. Patrick, you'll probably know better than I would, but who they were realizing that their thread was becoming, it was Scotty Russell. His thread was becoming so curated with one specific thing that he had to break that mold if he wanted to continue to like develop his creative process, because people started expecting him to only do one thing.
See, that's what we got into too. We totally got into that same problem. We became known as the hand-drawn girls. And I was like, I do not want to get stuck in that category. I would like bristle every time somebody would describe us as that in our intro for a podcast. They'd be like, Amy and Jen, the hand lettering girls. I was like, oh no, nope. Because then you only get people calling you for that thing.
Sure.
And usually the thing that's popular on Instagram isn't the thing that pays well. That's the other thing. So I don't want to be popular for hand lettering because that doesn't pay the bills at all, you know? So it's this like tough balance of figuring out all the different, like what you post on Twitter, what you post on Facebook, like where you're getting your best clients, how you balance it all. It's such a balancing act for sure. But so,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I just kind of feel like Jen and I have always been of the mind, like we don't ever want to get too pigeonholed, because especially nowadays, it feels like design trends are just so quickly changing.
Yeah.
And I was really worried that once hand-drawn type wasn't as popular as it was like a few years ago, like we would just have no work.
Mm. Yeah. You instantly go back to that coffee shop.
Right? I'd be like knocking on that door like, hey.
So you're totally right in that, you know, the work you put out there is the work you're going to get. That's the reality.
Sure.
So then what's your process for balancing that? Does that mean that you have to kind of move outside of the invoices and just create a one-off piece in order to drive attention that way? Or is it something that within the work that you're getting that you can just push it one way or the other?
Man, I mean, usually it's the first way. It's like making your own project, right? But my sister, Jen, is the best at, we have a couple of retainer clients just that are amazing to work with. We totally get each other, and it's just steady income every month that we can count on. And Jen is really good at thinking of projects for them, thinking of something that they haven't thought of, not waiting for them to come to us, but creating something that not only we want to do, but we think their audience would really engage with, and something that kind of pushes the boundaries, you know, because it's easy to get in a rut with your retainer clients just because you know what they want. It's kind of like formulaic, you know? And so Jen's been really good at that. We'll say, okay, what do we want to do and what's really popular right now that could translate into a great project for our client and for us to kind of learn something new or show new clients what we can do.
Yeah. So what is it like how do you guys go about building that relationship so that those clients that you've been working with for a while on retainer trust you with those new projects or new ideas? How do you work with that?
Yeah. Oh man. It's honestly just putting in the work and the time and realizing that it's more than just business. Like sure. At the end of the day, it is business. Like if they have to pay, they have to be on time as well. They have to do their end of the bargain. But if they're doing all that, like I want to go above and beyond and I want to let them know I'm here for them as a person. And I care about their business as much as they do.
Right.
And that really, at the end of the day, I think is always what sells it, because that was the hardest part for Jen and I when we were hiring for Chutzpah. Just doing interviews or like doing short little internships and stuff, we were always looking for somebody who treated Chutzpah like it was their own company.
Yeah.
And you just don't find that ownership very often. So if you can find someone who takes the time and maybe even goes above and beyond the scope when, you know, something really awesome could be done with the project, I feel like those little things add up and they start to trust that you really are wanting just what's going to make them money.
Yeah.
And also just you're wanting to do right by them and you're just a decent human, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it's just kind of like a time thing.
Well, so you're partnering with someone as opposed to just, you know, being hired out to do a task and go on your way. You know, I think it strikes me, you were talking about your sister, and the thing that stands out to me is, yes, obviously the design is important. And of course, you know, it's beautiful, and that's visually the first thing that catches someone's eye. But really, your job has to be strategy. Your job has to be dreaming for the client. Like if all you're ever doing is executing the brief that's laid in front of you, then those clients are going to come and go.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
The fact that you're strategizing beyond that is what makes these, you know, builds these really strong, important relationships.
For sure. And I think that is one way that you can show them, hey, I'm thinking about you guys, even when you haven't asked me to do so. Like, I'm seeing things and I've always got you in the back of my mind on how I can push your brand and really, you know, just make something great for you that really connects with your audience. And, yeah, I think a lot of freelance designers hate the human interaction part, right? That could be the hard part is like, you guys know.
Yeah, totally. It's no, like, you're not wrong.
You have to take critique and they're right. And you have to do a lot of handholding, and it's a lot of education that we feel like is, oh, why don't they just get this, you know? And it can be very exhausting in an emotional way. Mm-hmm. But that kind of stuff is really the stuff that goes the farthest. And I even think about that when I use services. Like, if somebody treats me with respect, that means so much more to me than like getting a deal, you know? Yeah.
So I'm curious, how do you feel about the phrase, training your client?
I mean, I think it's definitely a thing, but I guess now that you say that, it sounds like they're kind of like dogs or something. But yeah, I mean, it is, there's definitely a lot of education that goes into working with clients, because if you don't want to be frustrated every time you talk to them, you have to spend the time explaining to them so that they start to think in a way that you guys can both be on the same page.
Sure.
And I mean, I find that the first couple of weeks with working with any client, it's Jen and I just being like, okay, let's define the vocabulary, because we're all explaining things completely different. And you're saying like, look at this border, and really you mean like, I don't know, look at the page margins or whatever it is, you know? And just making sure that we're all using the same verbiage is like the first step. And then I don't know, from there it's just kind of as you go trying to educate them as much as you can without wasting too much time. They don't need to know everything, but it does help.
You've hit the nail on the head. I think clarity is so much more important on the front end of things than making sure they like your style, right?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, for me as a designer, when someone comes to me, I do this less and less, but when someone comes to me who I've never worked with before, they're like, hey, I heard that I should talk to you. I'm like, okay, before you do anything, go look at this website and look at what I do, and then come back to me, and then we'll talk, because I want to be clear from the get-go, this is the kind of person you're getting working on something. And then the language also is just a natural offshoot of that as well. Like, okay, now that you see what you like, what you see. Okay, now let's say the words that we're trying to communicate to each other and make sure that we're on the same page.
For sure, yeah.
Speaking of clarification, let's transition now and clarify this other project that you guys are working on, because there's a big difference between the stuff that we've been talking about with Chutzpah, where you guys are branding for other people, but you also have this other business that you guys are doing things with. So just clarify for us the difference between Odds and Sods and Chutzpah.
So Odds and Sods basically was just born out of what Patrick was saying earlier. He was saying, like, how do you get different kinds of projects that you've never done before? And we wanted to do packaging. It's not only is it like the most fun, like when you look on Pinterest, you're always like, oh, that packaging is so rad. Why am I not doing more of that? And so we were like, okay, we got to get packaging jobs. They pay pretty well if you can get the right client, and it would be good ongoing work. And so we were like, okay, people seem to be really into pins, and we had just created this pin through Chutzpah, this Lucky Cat pin that people were going nuts over. And so we thought, why don't we like let this thing have its own life? And we thought it would be better for Odds and Sods, this little product line, to live on its own as like this kind of accessories line, than kind of having it be an afterthought of the Chutzpah website. You know, it's like a big client like, 72 and Sunny or Google comes to your website, and you've got this store on the back end that's kind of like, are they a store or are they designers? Like what, like what's happening? And I feel like a lot of times, at least for a company page, it can be kind of confusing. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to kind of separate it out. And so Odds and Sods was a chance to do packaging and a chance to make fun little tchotchkes that we have the final say on. Like, we get to design whatever we want and no one gets to say, change this, right. You know? It's just our sanity.
I just want to know the point of the name, like the, like what is it, what's it all about? Cause there's a component to this that I want to get to that I think is really, really cool. So talk to us about Odds and Sods, and then we'll talk about the, like, what you're doing with it.
Yeah. So Odds and Sods, It's something that I always used to say, but it's actually not that common. People always want to know what it means, but it's the title of a Who album, for one, which we always love using musical references. Shine On, our motto, is like a Pink Floyd line. And it also is just like a British term for like knickknacks that you keep that have some sort of like a value or like a memory attached to them, but you don't really need them. They're just like little mementos.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's transition that into what you do. Because there's a higher purpose in this than just making money. There's right at the very top of the website, you declare some stuff. So talk to us about what the underlying purpose behind Odds and Sods is.
So it's a chance to get creative for ourselves, but we also, there's like a giving aspect on the back end too, right? So we donate 3% of everything that we make profit-wise to conservation efforts in California. And I never thought I'd be like this kind of a person, like a tree hugger, or even like, now that I live in California, I eat so healthy, which I used to eat like Lay's potato chips and like Twinkies and like, Kentucky
American
stuff.
Free thing wrong with that, rest
yeah.
of the audience.
Just, yeah. Oh, but it's so funny how like when you start to, the more you learn, the more you're just like, oh my gosh, like that's just, it's not like you're a tree hugger. It's just that like, I want to take care of the beaches and I want to make sure that we're leaving the earth kind of at least the way we found it, you know, a little bit. Sure. So,
and you just kind of like hugging trees because you like the feel of the bark. It has nothing to do with the environment.
There's nothing wrong with hugging a tree. If that's the only thing that will hug you, then that's fine.
Oh, half of our listeners, just a single tear rolled down their
cheek. I know. Oh my gosh. It's hilarious.
So
it's fun.
I think that's an amazing thing because so many people, especially when you're developing like businesses that sell, you know, necessaries.
Necessaries.
I love the idea that there's something, a higher purpose to it than just getting a fun little pin that you can stick on your denim jacket. You're right. Actually doing something helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I got that idea because my friend Cole, he and his friend started a company out here called Crochet Kids. And they have this amazing thing where they teach women a skill in like Peru and like Rwanda and places like that. And then they give these women, you know, fair pay and jobs, and they have a skill that they've learned, you know. And it was this great aspect of not only making a product, these great hats, but also having this really cool backstory of
sure.
and this like very cool giving back factor, you know?
Yeah.
I love that.
So, I think if there's maybe an overarching thing that I'm taking away, it's that as you've progressed through your career, in many ways, I think you've almost de-emphasized design as being the first thing. Not that it's not very important, but certainly having good relationships with people, having empathy for the people you work with and understanding their point of view, giving back, having values behind your organization, all of those things have, it sounds like, are kind of rising up around that. And they all complement each other, not that any of them are competing with the other, but it's definitely very easy to kind of see design as the hammer that'll break through any wall. And, you know, it doesn't matter what's standing in my way. As long as I just make it look better, then they'll like me in the end.
Right.
And I don't think that's the case. I think that you have to have all these other components along with it. So that being said, we're going to start to transition into final questions. But what I want to know more about running a business. I mean, it's hard enough to manage yourself. And I have some experience. It's definitely hard enough to work with family. And then on top of that, you are managing other people as well, right? Like you're putting together teams and, connecting clients and teams to complete projects. And you know, you have multiple businesses. You have the book that you said you're revising right now. And just so much going on. I kind of have this broad question of how, but maybe more successfully, what are kind of those core values that allow you to be successful in starting a new business or starting a new venture?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think that in order to be successful, it has to be a couple of things. I feel like we get a lot of people writing into Chutzpah where they're just like, you can tell they just saw that something was really popular and they're just trying to jump on it really quick and like get into it and make a buck. And I never say yes to those projects because it's so obvious that they don't have any passion about this industry or even any knowledge, and definitely not any empathy probably for their clientele or, you know, or the product they're making. So, yeah, I feel like you just have to have a passion or a general interest about, you know, what you're working on. And yeah, just wanting to connect with people, just like you said earlier, like I'm starting to realize that design is just so on the back burner, actually. Like design is everything and nothing actually, right? Like right. It matters so much, but it matters so little, you know? And, so I think that's the big thing is just having great connections in your life already and, learning how to listen and be there for other people too. Because when we first started our company, we wouldn't have been anywhere and we wouldn't have made it at all if we didn't have all the connections that we had from just friends throughout our lives, you know, right. Just staying in touch with people that are way more talented and way more successful than us that just have drive and ambition, right? Like people that have made really cool things out of their lives and they need help in the design aspect, you know? Yeah. And just, I mean, the minute we put up on Instagram and on our, and we tell people that our website was live and we just said, hey, we do design and we're taking clients. It was like a flood, you know? And, I think that just, you just have to keep people in your lives. It's really easy to hermit away and just like listen to your podcasts and you don't want to get ready and go out because you've been working all day, but it's so important to make yourself stay connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So my final question, I'm going to take us way back up to surface level and it'll be just a fun question. You posted on Twitter, show me a thing you can put salt on and I'll show you a thing you should have put garlic salt on. And there was a lot of responses to watermelon. So have you tried
it? So weird. Luke, have you tried it?
No,
is this a
I
thing?
Haven't tried it. No.
What the heck?
Salt on watermelon is a thing. I'll go and say that.
Okay,
that
is it a Southern thing then?
All the people who were responding were Southern.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. In the South.
I'm completely in the dark.
But, same. But it was all Southerners that said it.
Right.
And I don't know, which makes sense. I feel like name a Southerner who doesn't love salt. Like that's not, doesn't exist. It's just not a thing. But when I moved here, everyone would give me such a hard time because they were like, I eat too much salt and too much everything, sugar. But yeah, I don't know. Let's try it though. Let's make a pact.
Right, we'll I would gladly give up all sugar in place of salt.
You know what? That's tough, but I want to say yes, except for Coca-Cola that I could never give up Coca-Cola ever.
Oh man.
It's delicious. It's so good.
It's good.
That's what you're corn for. Wait, that's sugar.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm going to keep it at surface level, but maybe dive a little bit deeper. It's going to be a two-parter. So you have your font that you did with Retro Supply. It's the Palm Canyon Drive, and it is very much inspired by that 40s and 50s style California, right? And that is so much a part of your life, but so much a part of this interview and a part of you as well is Kentucky. So if you were to design a font package for Retro Supply, let's just assume it's all thing, you know, all apples to apples, all things considered the same, but he said, hey, I want a font from you now inspired by Kentucky. What would that font look like?
Oh, that's interesting. I want to say it would be like a very chunky sans serif, like the kind of hand-painted signage you see on barns. There's this one barn when you're driving from Nashville to Bowling Green, which is the route we take every time we go home. And the barn says, cleanest bathrooms in Kentucky.
I've seen that sign.
I love that
sign.
Oh my gosh. And also I appreciate that because that is a selling point. That person understands sales because I'm always like, we're pulling off here. But that kind of like that old school, like just very simple sign painters font. It's like a sans serif kind of a little bit rough edges, you know, I feel like that would definitely be it. Cause it's, you see it everywhere when you drive the country roads, like on a church or on a country store, you know?
So you heard it here first, folks. From Chutzpah Designs, in 2 months, you'll be able to get the Kentucky font from Retro Supply Co. She's going to start working on it tonight. But so that transitions then into my like the second part of that question. What is next for Chutzpah or for Odds and Sods or maybe something that we don't even know about yet? What's next for you that we can be on the lookout for?
We are working on our first font for just ourselves that we'll release just ourselves.
Cool. Okay.
And, actually two of them, one of them is inspired by, we recently went to Copenhagen. And so one of them is kind of like this fat, thick width. It's almost like a mix of a script and a serif or a sans serif font. And then we're also working on this, like, it's also a script font, but it's a would you call it a left lean? It's like this, you know? It's like the normal way, not the normal slant of a script. It's the opposite, almost like a signature. Yeah.
Wow.
So that one's going to be really fun. It's going to be very signature style. Like, it'll definitely be a display font. And yeah, so that's kind of our next thing, is trying to do more passive income things that will make our workload a lot easier. Because branding is a heavy load. You know, it's it's takes a lot out of you, and so you have to definitely take breaks.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great thing for anybody who's listening to keep in mind. We talked about that last week, even with Tim Anderson, and he needed like a creative break from that stuff, as opposed to just physical breaks. He needed to do something new because he was so, you know, enthralled in the stuff he was currently doing. Well, tell everybody where they can find what you're doing, where they can support what you're doing. They can follow you and give you suggestions about things to put garlic salt on.
Yes, I'd love all your suggestions, please. You can find us at Chutzpah Design on Instagram. And I think we are Get Chutzpah on Twitter. And we are those dummies that didn't get all of the handles at once, so they're all different. So just search Chutzpah. It's just us and a Jewish rapper, so you'll know which one we are.
You might.
You might.
I don't know. Is the Jewish rapper blonde?
I was going to say, you haven't seen what Jen looks at. Like, so, yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, well, can you do us a favor before you head out of here and help us choose our tokens, which are our categories for next week?
Sure.
Awesome. All right, well, that's it for the interview portion of the episode. Up next, we're going to draw some tokens. Are you looking to build your audience with a podcast? Then check out the folks at Cast Pro. Cast Pro is an experienced group of podcasters, developers, editors, and designers that want to remove any barriers that stand in the way of you creating your best content. No matter what your level of experience, they have the tools to come alongside you and elevate your message. With plans for the hobbyist to the professional, they've got you covered. Find out more at castpro.io. That's CASTPRO.io. Cast Pro. Focus on your message. They'll take care of everything else. So the tokens portion of every week is when we get to figure out the categories we're going to have next week, and then we pick our topics based on those categories. It's all completely random. I've got these three tokens in my hand. They have things on the other side of them. I'm going to flip them face down, shuffle them around. And Amy, if you would just do us the amazing honor of picking a number between 1 and 3, and this will be for Luke.
3.
Luke, you got art and design again, my friend. Congratulations. It's like it's Luke's birthday. Oh, he loves that one.
a month-long birthday.
I have 1 and 2. Go ahead and pick 1 for Patrick.
1.
TV and film. That means I have toys and games.
Andrew is a number 2.
Every time. Thank you again for chatting with us. Go check out all of Amy's stuff. It'll be in the show notes. Go to mof1podcast.com to find all of the show notes and links to the stuff we talked about in this episode, as well as a slew of other interviews. We mentioned several of them during this episode. Go and check out those interviews as well. So many people in the archive at this point. It's like mof1podcast.com/archive to find all of the people who had no business talking to us but still were generous with their time. It's so fun. Go listen to them. And then while you're there, you can head on over to our Slack channel, mof1podcast.com/slack. Amy talked a lot about the community and connecting with people. We have, since Slack has been around, we literally know people all around the globe now. And Patrick never has to pay to stay anywhere ever again, because he can just go and he always has a connection. Man. Go to our Slack channel and join the conversation there. There's over 200 active people in there right now having conversations, inspiring each other, encouraging each other, and showing each other's work. And it's just a great, great place. That community is so important to what we do here. So go do that right now. And then while you're doing that, head over to iTunes and Stitcher to subscribe. If you haven't already, we come twice a week every week. The Master Category episode on Tuesday and the interview episodes, Sandbox episodes on Thursdays. That's the schedule. If you don't want to ever have to worry about it again, just subscribe. It's super easy. And after you've done that, rate and review. It helps us a ton. Right, Patrick?
That's right. It helps us absolutely a ton. It doesn't take you very much time. It does us a lot of good. And we will read your review on our Tuesday episode. It really doesn't matter what you say. If it's explicit, we'll edit it.
Yeah, it's like you're the fourth host every time you leave a review. It's amazing.
But you only get 30 seconds of airtime.
Yeah, so it's not unlike Luke.
Yeah. Very much so. It's like having two Lukes.
So go ahead and do that. I think we're all over the socials. Just search M of One Podcast. Find us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/M of One Podcast to support the show. Financially, this stuff isn't free. We appreciate every dollar. You become a patron for as little as $1. Blooper level is, I believe, at $5. You can get fun episodes and some extra bonuses that not everybody gets. So go support the show there. Ultimately, we just want to connect with you. That's what we're all about, the community. And speaking of the community, just tell everybody again where we can find you, Amy.
My personal Instagram is Amy Hoodlum, and then our company Instagram is at Hoodspah Design.
Perfect. All right, we're going to get out of here. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Amy.
Peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butts.
The check is in the mail. Don't kick me when you know I'm down, baby. I've got my reasons, but you're cherry picking love tonight. Throwing them at me again. Don't let me see you with a sad face. Don't wanna see you smashing up all those dreams. It's all good in the hood tonight. Did I forget to mention a little bit of tension makes the world alright? Makes the world alright. And there's some pain you can't do without. Something you can't do without. That's the pain you tasted when you started walking out.
This week we talked to co-founder and design lead for Hoodspah Design Co., Amy Hood. I'm Andrew, your master of art and design.
I'm Patrick.
I'm not doing it again. You're just going to take it and go. This is the storm you love to ride on. Your feet are thunder. Keep on saying it all. It's all good in the hood.